This weekend starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Financial health check. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of the final weekend of June with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The economy is on solid footing, but does that mean that Americans' finances are healthier as a result?
A city in Wisconsin is trying a different approach to school bullying. It's handing out fines to parents whose children are guilty.
Traveling this summer, we'll have tips on how to save on flights, baggage fees, and ground transportation.
And the spouses learning to adjust to their new roles on Capitol Hill.
One of the interesting side effects of having more women in Congress is that there are more congressional husbands as their spouses. And this has traditionally been a pretty female-heavy group, the spouses. So they're getting this new influx of men who are shaking things up, and the Washington institutions are not always ready for them.
Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson on the stereotypes that still exist in D.C. politics. She's here later in the hour. Well, a major player has emerged over the past year in internal State Department family wellness initiatives. Susan Pompeo, wife of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, has taken cues from a couple of wives of former CIA directors who built up family initiatives at the CIA when their husbands headed the agency. You'll recall that Mr. Pompeo was also CIA director before becoming America's top diplomat last year. More on Mrs. Pompeo's emerging role from Guy Taylor, national security and foreign policy reporter at the Washington Times. Guy, what have you seen?
This was the third time she traveled with him. She captured some international headlines back in January when she went with him to the Middle East. And at the time, we were in a government shutdown, and there were some media reports that diplomatic unnamed sources, of course, complained that it was inappropriate that she would travel with him at a time when a lot of State Department employees weren't getting paychecks because of the shutdown. So what's interesting is that she would be willing to talk at this time, and she kind of opened up in this really behind-the-scenes way where she talked about how, you know, Mike Pompeo's got this kind of reputation as somebody who's really liked in private meetings, of having this sort of charisma when the cameras are turned off. Other foreign leaders and diplomats, they really, like, appreciate this. They always seem to leave meetings with him smiling, even when they vehemently disagree with his conservative policies, such as on Iran, the nuclear deal, trashing the Obama administration's foreign policy and speeches, his promotion of Trump's America First posture, etc. So in public, Pompeo has this other reputation of somebody who's really kind of stiff and a little bit grouchy. He doesn't really connect on a charisma level that, say, former Secretary of State John Kerry did on his trips around the world, especially in Europe. And that's where Susan Pompeo really comes in, where if she's traveling with her husband, suddenly you'll see him out in public smiling at times, which is interesting. It's almost like he's a little bit softer and more likable. It's definitely an interesting dynamic, and I think, you know, in terms of inside baseball, it's worth considering, given that she is traveling, as far as we know, on the taxpayer dime.
We're speaking with Guy Taylor, national security editor at the Washington Times. His piece is called "Do You Feel Safe? Susan Pompeo Makes Happiness and Security of Diplomatic Families Her Mission." So you mentioned, or she mentioned to you, that she asks, "Do you feel safe?" Did she pick this up on her own? Did she?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a big priority for Mike Pompeo. And look, I'm not going to pretend that I went into deep discussion with Susan Pompeo about this, but the presumption from the journalistic side is that Secretary Pompeo really made a name for himself back in the Benghazi hearings that really went after then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, where, of course, Ambassador Chris Stevens had died in a terrorist attack in Libya. And Pompeo really made a name for himself on that. So you can imagine that now that he is the roles have switched, and here he is as Secretary of State. The security of diplomats is a huge issue for him. He's kind of obsessed with it because I think he understands that it would be politically bad if there were an incident in which American diplomats were endangered on his watch. But at the same time, you know, the whole Benghazi thing away from politics, that horrific incident really elevated the awareness of the fact that American diplomats are out in dangerous situations. You just don't really hear about it. We've got embassies in well over 100 countries around the world. And so this is like a big thing for him. And I think that Susan Pompeo, she has a unique opportunity to really, you know, look, if the Secretary of State's spouse shows up at your embassy, and you as a career diplomat, you're among, say, 100 American State Department employees at an embassy anywhere in the world, and the Secretary of State comes through, you might get a selfie with him or a few minutes of a private greeting that he gives to diplomats. But if the Secretary of State's wife shows up and is actually holding a roundtable meeting, you know, you've got a chance to sit down right with the top directly and talk in a kind of off-the-record way. It was interesting because she told me that she feels that people are really genuine with her in these meetings. Because I asked her, I said, you know, do you think people just tell you what you want to hear and they're afraid about, you know, this being like a whistleblower thing? And she definitely felt that people are genuine and they recognize the kind of uniqueness of this setup that sort of unfolded before our eyes.
Thanks, Guy. Guy Taylor, national security and foreign policy reporter at The Washington Times.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
If you had to grade the U.S. economy today, it would probably get straight A's. The country is a month short of the longest economic expansion ever. Unemployment is at 50-year lows. Stocks notched the longest bull market last year and are again nearing fresh highs. But a survey of Americans finds their individual financial security is less clear than those collective high points suggest. Jana Heron, personal finance reporter at USA Today, has a look at a new study. Jana, what are we learning?
You know, I think we feel a little bit better because you're seeing all the great numbers out there. Like the stock market is close to all-time highs. Unemployment is at 50-year lows. GDP growth keeps on going. So you see all those things that are happening in the greater world. But when it comes to your own personal finances, that doesn't mean that's translated down to saving more for retirement, for example.
All right. So you said we remain stressed about money. What are those stressors?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are very concerning. First of all, only 58% of Americans have a retirement account, and that figure hasn't changed really in 10 years since the Great Recession. So that's very concerning. We're also seeing, even though it's a small percentage, more Americans are taking out a loan or hardship withdrawal from their retirement accounts, and so that's really concerning as well. Another thing that really hasn't changed in the last 10 years is the percentage of people spending less than their income. That's stayed roughly the same.
No kidding. I was surprised. You said only 1 in 5 Americans experienced an income drop in the last year, and half can comfortably meet their monthly obligations. Put that number in perspective.
Those things are much better. 10 years ago, when we were coming out of the Great Recession, it was 40% of people experiencing an income drop in the last year, and more people couldn't meet their monthly bills and expenses. So those things have definitely gotten better, and I think make people feel a lot better about their financial security. But then again, we have things that are popping up that we didn't see as much 10 years ago, and that is the rise of student loan debt and how much of a stressor that is on younger people. Nearly half with student loans wish they had gone to a cheaper college. Half worried that they won't be able to pay off their student loans ever. So these are big pieces of people's financial budgets that are not getting better.
There was a stat, and I'm scanning the story looking for it when I read it earlier, something along the lines of 42% of people said that within a month they could come up with $2,000 for an emergency, and another 20% or so said maybe. Like, that's, you're talking about 60% of people who could come up with that kind of money. I thought the stat was something like we couldn't come up with $400 for some emergency.
Right. There is some confusion over the difference. The $400 stat is from the Federal Reserve survey, and I think you need to be able to come up with that within a week.
Okay.
And in this one, it's can you come up with $2,000 in a month?
Yeah.
Okay. So now you have 65% of Americans saying, yes, I can or probably can.
We're speaking with Jana Herron, personal finance reporter at USA Today. She's crunched some data, has a story called The Economy is Booming, but Are Americans' Finances Healthier Because of It? What about in the weeks and months ahead? Did it say that some of these good numbers will continue to improve, they'll level off, they may slide backwards? Any feel for that?
You know, we don't have a feel for that. It doesn't look forward. But what is concerning is that if there is another recession, some people are predicting, you know, as early as next year, there will be many Americans who are not going to be in the best position to weather that, and will probably feel a little bit of pain. Hopefully, you know, things will get better and people will be able to improve their financial picture even more.
You know, you live and breathe this stuff. Why is it that some of these numbers never seem to move?
You know, I think from the conversations I've had with a lot of people on the ground, regular folks like you and me, one of the things that they notice is that costs keep going up. And it's not just costs at the grocery store, but it's those bigger budget items like health care, housing is a huge one, and the added student loan burden. And so these things take, even if they go up just a little bit and your wages go up, it's still a huge chunk of your monthly budget. And so people may be earning more, but they're not seeing it as much translate at the end of the month.
Thanks, Jana. Jana Herron, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Parents of children who bully others could face fines after the city council in Wisconsin Rapids voted in favor of a controversial anti-bullying ordinance. The measure includes a penalty of $50 for a child's first bullying offense. The Wisconsin Rapids Daily Tribune says there are also graduated fines for continued violations. Will it work? Analysis from Stephanie Mann, child safety expert and author of a book called Empowerment Parenting. Stephanie, what was your initial reaction to this?
I thought it was really good because it puts a spotlight on bullying. And actually, we really need to have a conversation about how to empower parents to prevent kids from bullying. So I was happy to see that they put that spotlight where it belongs.
Is it the vast majority of the time that kids who are bullies often learn it from parents?
Unfortunately, yes. What, you know, this is learned behavior, and most of this behavior comes from the home. If children see domestic violence and child abuse or neglected, they can become bullies because they simply do not understand how to live by their own spirit. They don't have that information. So it's important that we give children the tools they need so they don't bully.
All right, so in this situation, a lot of these school proposals sometimes or government proposals tend to treat the symptoms and not the root cause. But here, I think it's sort of getting at the root cause, isn't it? But I guess the parents ultimately may need counseling to resolve what may be happening in the home.
Well, you're seeing what's happened today is today's children. Bullying is a bigger problem. There's a much bigger problem. You see kids today, they're not only bullying, but they're misusing sex, they're stealing, they're becoming violent and committing suicide, which is an epidemic in this country because parents are failing to give their children the spiritual foundation that they can stay emotionally centered. Children with emotional support discover their own inner power, so they learn how to live, become happy, healthy, and live happy, healthy lives. And if you don't give them that foundation, they just grow up like a vegetable garden. You know, they've got food and water, but they don't have the emotional support they need to live happy, healthy lives.
I'm speaking with Stephanie Mann, child safety expert, also author of a book called Empowerment Parenting. And we're talking about fining parents to deter bullying. It's a proposal in a Wisconsin school district. Generally speaking, are parents in denial about bullying when it's either their kids or if they're accused themselves?
Unfortunately, yes. We have a lot of helicopter parents that don't understand that children have to learn from their own mistakes. They have to learn from some of the trials and errors that happen to kids. For example, a child that is bullied and at an early age needs to learn how to handle that bully instead of the helicopter parent coming in to save them. Of course, if the bullying is severe, then they need to step in. But generally speaking, kids learn from each other, and we don't have to. You know, I think the worst thing you can do is overprotect a child, because then you make them weak and dependent. Once they're weak and dependent, then you see children not even getting out of the home today that are not just teenagers, but they're like 21 years old and they're still living on mom and dad's couch.
At what age can kids begin to grasp that empowerment?
Well, when my son was 6 years old and he was in first grade, he came home crying. A boy was picking on him and he didn't like it and it made him feel bad. Well, about a week later, he came back all happy and excited. And he said, I took care of Johnny. And I said, oh, okay, what did you do? And he said, well, I told him I was going to punch him in the nose. And he said, I turned around and walked away. And he said, and he reported it to the teacher. So that was my son actually solving his own problem.
Stephanie Mann, the book is called Empowerment Parenting. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. We've all been through this at the airport, racing for a flight in full stress mode. Here's a way to decompress. Use Clear. Clear helps you get through security with the tap of your fingers so you can get to your gate faster and relax. Here's the thing. You are your own ID. Leave your driver's license in your wallet. Clear uses your eyes and fingertips to get you through security, and it's a simple sign-up. Create your account online before going to the airport. Once you get there, a Clear ambassador helps you finish the process. Not just airports either. Clear gets you through security faster in 50-plus airports and stadiums, with more being added every day. Also, if you're traveling with family, up to three of them can be added at a discounted rate, and kids under 18 are free when traveling with a Clear member. Clear works with PreCheck, too. And right now, listeners of our show can get their first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/Gordon and use the code Gordon. Zip through airport security with your fingerprints. That's clearme.com/Gordon, code Gordon, for your free 2 months of Clear. clearme.com/Gordon, promo code Gordon. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Lego, the world's biggest toy maker, pledged 7 years ago to find and start using sustainable alternatives to its raw materials by the year 2030. Realizing the scale of the challenge, it later invested $150 million to hire scientists and fund research and development. More from This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Lego is trying to make its little plastic building bricks a bit more sustainable, but as Sabira Chowdhury of the Wall Street Journal tells us, it's not as easy as you might think. Sabira, why is Lego trying to change its bricks?
So there is no huge pressure from regulators or consumers, but basically when I visited Lego, they told me they feel a responsibility because their whole ethos is that they want to create the children of the future. They want children to learn and play and be educated. And they say we can't really do that if we're also destroying the planet that they're growing up in. And so the idea is they want to move away from a non-renewable source, i.e. oil-based plastic, and they want to move towards something renewable, which is why they're mainly looking at trying to source plastics from plants.
What plants have they looked at and what have they found out?
They've looked at a variety of stuff, so corn, wheat, hemp, sugarcane. And I think what they found out is that it's actually very difficult to do what they're trying to do. So my story talks about how LEGO's been on this journey for several years, and so far about 2% of everything that they make is made out of plant-based plastics. And that 2% is a very specific type of LEGO piece. It's not the actual brick, which makes up the bulk of what LEGO sells. It is the softer elements, as they call them. So things like fishing rods and dragon wings and, you know, trees and leaves and bushes. So softer plastic. But that harder plastic that they need to actually make the bricks, to find a plant-based version of that is something that so far has eluded them, and they're continuing to look for.
What problems did they run into?
So it seems like a whole range of stuff. Anybody who's played with Lego will know that the bricks have this almost perfect, you can put them together and they'll stay, but then you can also take them apart really easily, which is important because if you have kids and they're playing with the Lego, you don't want to have to be helping them take those pieces apart. So I think what the Lego executives call clutch power is a really important thing. They haven't really been able to find a material that will give them the exact clutch power that they need. Some materials looked good, but then after a few days, the bricks started to fall apart. They weren't able to keep the color. Some of them broke when they were dropped. So there's been a whole range of issues that have essentially culminated in LEGO not being able to meet the very specific criteria that it has to make sure its bricks last a long time but are also safe, don't contain any chemicals. So there's a lot of stuff that they need to hit, and they just haven't found a material that's allowed them to do all of those things.
We're speaking with Sabira Chowdhury of the Wall Street Journal about LEGO trying to make its bricks more sustainable. What about recycled plastic? That seems like a perfect place for it.
Yeah, I think the challenge is, again, because the product is directed at children, and children tend to put everything, including Lego pieces, into their mouths, they need to make sure that the plastic they use is very safe, preferably food-grade material. So they want to make sure that they know where this plastic is coming from, what it was used for previously. There's a huge difference between plastic that's used to, say, you know, carry paint or chemicals or some kind of toxic substance versus plastic that is used for just a water bottle or a Coke bottle. And ideally, they would want the same sort of plastic we use for food-grade products. But there's a lot of competition now for that plastic because everybody's trying to use more recycled plastic. So I think their big issue is going to be how can they get the volumes they need? How can they get it from a supplier where they know it, the exact provenance, the exact quality? And so far, that doesn't really look like it's happening anytime soon. So I think they are looking at recycled, but bio-based or plant-based plastics definitely needs to be an avenue that they explore as well.
It's Wall Street Journal reporter Sabira Chowdhury with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. Hasbro has announced that it's releasing a version of the classic board game Monopoly designed for the digital age. But financial experts argue the game's new design could deprive children of important financial lessons, especially since there's no more cash. More from Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Jacob, what's up here?
One thing that came to mind when I heard about this is, you know, we live in this increasingly cashless world, and Monopoly is, you know, one of the ways kids learn about money, counting out money, how to spend money, and, you know, doing away with it. What does that do for, you know, kids' ability to learn about finances and things like that?
All right, so with this game, with no cash, I basically tell the AI machine, pay Jacob $500 in rent or something like that. Is that how it goes?
Exactly, yeah. There are buttons that you push, and then there, you know, the instructions have a certain list of commands that you can make. You can't just say anything. The system isn't that smart quite yet, but you can, you know, ask to pay rent, you can ask to buy property, and it keeps track of all that for you. And, you know, this isn't the first time that Monopoly has released a cashless edition. They've been releasing editions since 2006 around the world that have used debit cards or credit cards instead of cash, instead of paper money. But this has, you know, gone a step further, and there's not even a credit card, kind of like the real world. You know, you can now buy stuff with an Amazon Echo or, you know, device that has, you know, Microsoft's Cortana or something like that. So, you know, this is reflecting the real world that a lot of these kids are growing up in.
I'm speaking with Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch, and he's written a piece entitled Monopoly Doesn't Use Cash Anymore, The Questionable Lesson that teaches kids. I thought there was an interesting point when talking about physical cash from the old Monopoly game, handing over kind of your final dollar in defeat and the psychology surrounding that about, you know, next time you better be more careful with your money. There are real world lessons there. How do you translate that now, though, with no physical cash?
Exactly, yeah, and that's a challenge that parents, you know, are facing, you know, all the time, not just when they're playing board games with their kids. Children today are growing up seeing their parents use credit cards. They're seeing their parents, you know, online shopping, and that makes money a little less tangible to children. You know, they may be encountering literal dollar bills, coins, less often than, you know, children in the past did. One financial analyst I spoke with for the story gave an amusing anecdote. Someone he encountered at an ATM, you know, it was a family, and the child asked the father, you know, can you get more money from the money machine? And the father's like, well, that's not how it works. And, you know, it kind of just shows that as payments have become more and more digital, that makes it harder for kids to understand what money is, how it works, how to save, things like that. And games like Monopoly, like the Game of Life, board games can be an important teaching tool. You know, the analyst I spoke with pointed out that, you know, it's, you know, for children that, you know, maybe not, you know, especially if they're too young to be getting an allowance or something like that, handing over, you know, paper money, fake money, is one way of kind of starting to impart that lesson of financial prudence and saving on them. You know, they'll learn the hard way in a board game when they spend all their money really quickly to buy up properties and then realize they bought the wrong property or something like that, however it plays out when you're playing the game.
Thanks, Jacob. Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch, based in New York.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
A record-breaking total of 127 women who now serve in Congress has gotten a significant amount of attention. The corresponding shift in the demographics of their spouses has not. As Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson found out, to be a congressional husband is to be outnumbered. She's on Capitol Hill. Christina set this up.
One of the interesting side effects of having more women in Congress is that there are more congressional husbands as their spouses. And this has traditionally been a pretty female-heavy group, the spouses. So they're getting this new influx of men who are shaking things up, and the Washington institutions are not always ready for them. We've heard some fun stories of very light lunches, of spouses going to receptions and all being handed quilted gift bags with jewelry and pashminas and makeup, and, you know, the men aren't always quite sure what to do with them, although sometimes their wives appreciate it.
I thought it was funny too. Well, maybe funny, but like how the stereotype still exists, I guess. A lot of the husbands who attended a particular event, I think at least three of them in your story, were thought to be security.
Yes. They said people rarely just assume that they are the husband of a lawmaker. They often mistake them for Secret Service or ask them if they can stash bags under the table. One of the husbands we spoke to, of Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, said he has started wearing a name tag that says Mr. Chrissy just to make sure people know who he is. Sometimes they think he's her chief of staff or her bodyguard, but they never just guess that he's her husband there going to political events with her.
Wow. It's kind of funny, not funny. What is this particular group, the Spouses Club, doing to adjust to this?
Well, there are a whole bunch of different groups. The Democratic Spouses Forum said that they have changed some of their programs over the years. They used to have sort of a big sister orientation program, and they've changed that to take it away from sort of, it's more gender neutral now. The Republican Congressional Forum used to send out their correspondence in actual pink envelopes. I got to see one. Now they use email, so no color needed there. But they're trying to do more events that are inclusive of both genders and aren't as, you know, female-oriented. But the gift bags, that's something that has yet to change.
We're speaking with Christina Peterson, reporter at the Wall Street Journal on Capitol Hill. She's written a piece entitled, Influx of Women in Congress Gives Spouses Club a makeover. How about who was the guy who said he was the hot dog bun Sherpa for some event?
Yes, that is Alyssa Slotkin, the congresswoman from Michigan. Her husband, retired Army Colonel Dave Moore, he works at the Pentagon and has changed his schedule to commute with her. And he, when he's with her in the district, drives her around, helps her out. And one of the special perks of being a congressional spouse is that you get a special pin, which allows you to skip the security line. And so he has used that to run errands for his wife's staff. They had an office party, and he was transporting the hot dog buns through and was able to get them to the office faster because he had the spouse's pin.
Seems good-natured, right? Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson on Capitol Hill. Want to save money on your summer vacation? MarketWatch put together some hacks. When booking a flight, for example, do your research at home, but book on your work computer. Also, browse flights in incognito mode. You can also use an app like Kayak or Hopper to notify you when fares go down. Second, pack less and buy when you get there. Lower baggage fees by scratching toiletries, for example, hats and more than one book, maybe your heavy shoes. Pick that stuff up at a thrift store when you arrive, MarketWatch says. On the way home, donate the stuff to lessen your baggage load. Also, some airline mileage cards have baggage allowances, which can more than make up for their annual fee. When it comes to ground transportation, renting a car on vacation, as you know, can be very expensive. Use local budget car rental sites instead of the airport, or run the math on whether two Uber or Lyft trips per day might cost less than renting a car, but you might want to be sure to then stick to just those two trips. Or research train and bus options in your destination, because one, you'll get to ride next to locals, and two, you'll see more of the place that you're visiting. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.